Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Welcome to the last episode of the year. Y'all voted on this one for Black Friday. Unfortunately, once again, Streets of Fire did not get the love. I'm trying to remember, Kyle, what was your pick on this? Was it Crossroads? Was this where Crossroads came in?
I think it was either Stealing Harvard or Crossroads.
It was Stealing Harvard. Okay. It was Stealing Harvard. Crossroads went on to
the Patreon, right? Yeah.
Crossroads was on the Patreon. So, Scott, I don't even need to read the percentages. I think it was like 93% of the votes or something like that went to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. I'll ask you why you picked this in just 1 second, but I just want to get it out of the way. People, I'm sure, are sitting and wondering, did Matt cry? Yes, the words, rest in peace, Jim Henson, came across the screen before anything, and immediately I started sobbing. Mm-hmm. So, Scott, besides trying to make me cry, why did you pick Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze?
Because I wanted to win.
We needed this W.
Yeah, I was like, listen, 2021 has not been my year. Taking a lot of beatings this year. I think I need this.
I'm going to start off with a controversial statement. I used to love this movie, right? Like, this movie, to me, was kind of like the same reason why I loved Return of the Jedi. It's got a lot of cool rubber monsters. But, man, and the more I researched about the making of this movie, the more I'm like, this is why I feel like this movie doesn't work for me as an adult like it worked for me as a kid.
It's a kid's movie. What is your problem?
The creators hated this film. And the reasoning why...
Oh, the guys that made Turtles?
Like that made the comic books.
Of course
they did. Because their whole thing was like... The first movie was this huge box office success. And it was really kind of more in the world of their comic books and less in the world of the cartoons. Like it was like a healthy blend of both. And parents flipped a shit over it. They were like, this is so violent. So, like, it comes time to do the sequel. And they offered up plot ideas from their comics. They're like, please, please don't make this like the cartoon. Like, you could do, like, let's do the story of, like, Baxter Stockman and the Mousers.
Ooh,
and we can do that. He's like, or we can even throw the Rat King in there. Like, the Rat King would be cool. And, like, the studio was like, nope, we can't have any weapons in the movie. So that's why you never see the Turtles use their weapons, because parents complained about the weapons in the movie.
Oh, shit.
And they're like, it has to be goofy and comical, and we need to sell more action figures, so we're not going to put Bebop and Rocksteady in this. We're just going to make two new characters to sell more toys.
Absolutely the greatest sin of this movie. It's not the fact that it wasn't as dark as the original Turtles movie, because... I mean, I haven't watched the original Turtles in probably 20 years.
Same.
It's been a long time. I mean, I watched it in high school, definitely watched it once in college. I mean, I watched it when I was a kid, too, but I'm saying, like, I rewatched it in different phases of my life, but not in my 30s.
Yeah.
And I gotta say that I never liked how dark it was, and I think that was a really weird flex of them to do that with the original movie, because they're like... Well, the comic books led to the cartoons, which led to the toys, which led to the movie, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's what I understand.
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
I mean, or maybe the toys and the cartoon were the same, and then they led to the movie. But, like, the movie was definitely not what I was expecting as a child. I remember seeing it as a kid, I mean, and being like... This isn't very fun. And then seeing Secret of the Ooze and being like, this is fun. And that's what these movies are for. You know, like, that's the thing about Turtles is that, I hate to say it, but you really do have to have the greatest amount of appeal, because there was no internet. They weren't going to find their people. Fucking nerds who love the ultra violent comic books aren't going to, like, the black and white comic books aren't going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go see Turtles in the theater 10 times, you know? Like, they're not going to get their money out of them. It's kids that are going to be like, Mommy, Daddy, take me back and go see it again. And then they want to watch it on VHS. And, like, that's why.
Caused a lot of divorces, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
exactly.
The other big thing that I need to bring up about this movie is the quick turnaround time that this movie was made. So the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie came out March 30th, 1990. This film came out March 22nd, 1991. So
that's
legitimately
incredible.
Less than a year. Like, they saw that they had a hit, quickly went into writing a script, getting all the special effects and makeup. Like, apparently they fired the director of the first movie to bring in another director who recast April O'Neil, and they fired Corey Feldman because he was going to rehab, and they're like, that's a bad look for our kids' show.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't be here. The other thing that I learned that I didn't know was that the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is considered an indie film. So it, for a really long time, was the highest grossing indie film of all time, because it was still under that New Line Cinema. It was built in-house at New Line. So
that's cool.
Like,
wow. That's one of those fun facts that people come to this show for, and I am definitely I should have been on my game because it's my movie pick, but hey.
Nah, I like being the research guy because I speak it. You know me, I don't have any emotions except for facts.
I like being the guy who had
says
no
the guy
idea
who was like, I got 5 seconds in and I started crying.
Real quick, and then we'll dive into the movie, but I want to just harp back onto what they were pitching for the movie is like, God, I want a good, like, I'm bummed that now we live in, like, this CGI age, because, like, I wanted that practical effect Baxter Stockman, like, in my life. Ever since I was a child, I wanted that fly mutation sequence. And then I agree that they said, like, they kept pushing Rat King as another option because they're just like, visually, it would be so cool, like, having this dude wrapped up in bandages that's, like, in just covered in mice, like. So it's like, I think that they really want it to do something more interesting than, like, hey, here's, like, Bebop and Rocksteady, but way dumber.
So I do have to hammer this home. I have never and will never forgive them for not doing Bebop and Rocksteady. And then I can't even begin to tell you how upset I am with myself for watching some of that live action or the CGI Turtles movie that they did, like, 4 or 5 years
ago.
The
Michael Bay one where they're aliens?
Were they aliens? I didn't watch the whole thing. I literally fell asleep.
It's Alien Tech, which is actually technically more accurate to the comics, that it was like alien slime, but, like, the internet lost their goddamn mind. They're like, so the turtles are just aliens now. Okay. You know how even keeled the internet is when something changes.
right down the middle, very, very level-headed.
I don't understand why they couldn't even be upset about something worthwhile, like how bad the turtles look. Not like, it's alien slime, you know?
Enough tangents. Secret of the Ooze.
Secret of the Ooze is a tangent. the whole movie's a fucking
tangent. And if we go through this discussion without me talking about my Turtles toys, like, that would be an absolute travesty. But before we get into the movie, I need to know what Kyle's beer pairing is.
Oh, absolutely. It's Beware the Turtle. Milk stout from it's a milk stout from our friends at Nyanic Public House. It was one of their first beers that they released. They don't have it anymore, but I had one in my fridge and I was like, this is perfect.
I was hoping it was going to be called The Secret of the Booze.
Well, so I the secret of
goddamn, that's so
dude. I'll tell you, man. I forgot, like, before I tried to, like, scope out the liquor store that I used to work at for beers, knowing what we're going to watch. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, there's no ooze. There's no, like, slimy, like, sap. Like, I don't know.
You could have gotten, like, a green gose or, like, a kiwi gose.
There was this beer that mimicked the Double Dare logo, and I was like, that's slimy, oozy, like, it's a couple, you know, iterations away. And then I looked in the fridge and Beware the Turtle was there.
Perfect.
It was there.
All right, so Scott, why did you, I mean, beyond needing the win, obviously, you know, there was a million movies you could have chose, but you were like, Secret of the Ooze. I feel like it's something we've brought up multiple times, especially on Patreon.
I think it's just been on my mind. I don't know. And I was aiming very heavily for the opposite of a horror movie, but all the things that we love on horror movie night, which is literally just practical effects and shitty jokes.
If you're watching the video on Patreon, you may have just seen me literally have the most in the moment light bulb thing before we hit record.
I figured out my double feature. I actually, you know, if you didn't come up with what I know you just came up with, I was going to suggest it to you because we just started recording. I was like, well, I got a double feature for him. I know what it is.
So, like I said, I wanted to be clear. I still enjoyed the hell out of my watch of this. I'm not saying that this was a bad movie.
It is a bad movie. You can still enjoy your watch, but it's a bad movie.
So let me ask you this question, because I had this written down for me.
Yes, the Connecticut sewers are very nice. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking if the sewers in Connecticut were nice, like they said.
Was there a specific moment where you suddenly realized that this movie was possibly not going to fully hold up to your childhood memories of it?
In memory of Jim Henson. No, just kidding. Let me just be clear, because I think it'll sort of inform the rest of my thoughts from here on out. All of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, live action movies, run together in my head because I've only watched them when I was 5 or 6, maybe, at my cousin's house. They had already all been released. Like, I have no...
I was gonna say, Kyle's a lot younger than us, too, so you may have just missed the train of Turtles as well.
I'm born in 91, so, like...
Yeah, you were already on the Power Rangers tip at that point.
Bro, what's wrong with Power Rangers? I'm, like, a good 9 years older than this other youngin' that we got on here, and...
Well, okay.
I was Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So strap in. It's story time with Matt real quick. I think I may have told this story, but just in case I haven't, I repeat it third grade. And I was told, because it happened when I changed schools, I was told because of my birthday being in October that the school had a different cutoff of when the birthday was. That, like, you know, and I was like, okay, that makes sense because, like, September is the start of the school year, but, like, January is the start of the actual year.
You're like, show me the paperwork. Show me the paperwork.
So for years, I was like, that totally makes sense. So flash forward to, like, late 20s, early 30s, we're having dinner with my aunt and her boyfriend, and my sister's dating a guy who also had to do third grade a second time. And my cousin's boyfriend is making fun of him, being like, how dumb do you have to be to repeat third grade of all grades? And Julie, my sister, goes, well, that's awkward because Matt repeated third grade. And I immediately go, no, the reason I got held back was because of this. And my dad goes, that wasn't the reason. It was because you wanted to be a Ninja Turtle. And
my sister
starts losing her mind. She's like, that's so funny. And I'm like, what? And my mom goes, that wasn't the reason. It was because he wanted to be a Power Ranger. So finally the dust settles, and it was the Ninja Turtles. Also, side note, I've hinted at this for a little bit. Took a test recently, a couple months ago, that revealed that I might be slightly autistic. And that's an important thing to know for this story of me in third grade.
Sure.
So I was almost a full year younger than everybody else in my grade because of the being born in October. So, like, when everyone turned 10, I was the last person in the class to turn 10 type situation. So at that point, Power Rangers had come out and all the kids had given up on the Turtles and were really into Power Rangers. But I was still really into Ninja Turtles. So none of the kids wanted to hang out or play with me because I didn't understand, like, their references anymore. So when they switched to the new school, the guidance counselor was asking about me and asked, how is he socially? And my mom was like, well, he doesn't have a lot of friends. And she explained the whole situation. And they're like, well, how's his grades? And they're like, you know, he's like a BC student. And they're like, I mean, it doesn't hurt for him to do third grade again, and it'll just make him an AB student because he'll already know all of that information, but it'll put him with kids more his age, and it'll, like, kind of help them adjust, right. But like, that is my association now, is that it's like, you either liked one or the other, you can't like both of them, Scott.
Very divisive in your in your history.
But I'm also 5 years older than you, Matt. 4 years older than you, Matt.
Yeah.
And so I think that I might have been on the cusp of too old for
to be watching Power Rangers
and play. I might have played with the kids a year younger than me, because I was in a second, third split class 2 years in a row. So I was the second grader in a second, third split because I was gifted, which just means anxiety.
Gifted was a big umbrella term.
It's basically like if you got good grades because you could hyperfocus. So anyway, definitely when I was in second, third split the second time, when I was the older cohort, I was absolutely playing Power Rangers on the playground when I should probably have been chasing girls and without consent, like shit that, white middle American boys do.
Pulling hair and spitting on the girl that you like because you're like, I don't like you. Puh.
Back to the movie after Matt's fucking depressing ass story. So the thing
they all run together for me was what I wanted to say, but I'm glad you brought up Power Rangers because I feel very connected to the type of action that this movie portrayed as to be very Power Rangers-y, as opposed to what you guys were talking about with the first movie being dark. Like, I don't even remember, like, that doesn't even like make sense to me. So this, I'm glad that we watched this.
It was dark in tone and also just the visuals in general. Like everything was like poorly lit. So Scott, go. We keep cutting you off. It's craziness.
It's okay.
Up in here.
I don't mind. I really don't, because it's not like we're trying to get through the plot of this movie, because if you're watching this or listening to this, you absolutely have seen this movie.
Also, the plot is that they find out what the secret of the ooze is, and the secret is that it created the turtles, and then Shredder uses it to create more turtles and
basically
a wolf.
different kind of turtle. So I love the pizza montage at the beginning. Because
everybody, Roy's Pizzeria is fucking killing it that night.
Like, I had a panic attack. You're crying because Jim Henson died. I'm having a panic attack because it's like, everybody wants pizza. Who the fuck is making the pizza?
There's just like two cops just slamming slices outside. Like,
they're not working.
Could you imagine if that was 2021? Like, them trying to fucking make that pizza? Like, we're
short-staffed. Bro, that's why I'm watching it. And I'm why is everybody so close to each other?
They're not even factoring in Grubhub or DoorDash or any of those things.
Man, and the dude who is basically DoorDashing, he's a delivery, boy on a Vespa. He is such a shithead to this girl because he's like, which one of you fine ladies wants to ride with me tonight? And they're like, as if, which they don't say, but it'd be cooler if they did. And he goes, oh, well, then I guess it's because you're fucking fat. I'm like, what? Jesus.
Yeah. Don't bring out the nunchucks, but make sure you know that girl... that you want to like bring down that girl's self-esteem by your mullet ass pizza delivering piece of shit.
But I also don't fight the patriarchy.
Listen, right. The pizza guy's my point where I was like, oh, this movie's not going to hold up the way that I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Because the turtles show up, right? Like the turtles show up and he straight up stares at the camera. He breaks... There's a fourth wall break, and he goes, blah, 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 blah. Like he does like the cartoonish head shake, like turtles.
Yeah.
Oh my! Like
that's a good realization point that this is not going to go well.
I was like, this was definitely made for 5 year olds.
If this takes you out of the movie, what's going to take you back into the movie is when they find the giant daffodils that are being, like mutated by the ooze, and they pull one up, and there's goo inside of it, and I'm like, that attention to detail is just...
That's science, baby. That's botany, baby.
I want to read the one note that I wrote. Kyle, you're a script writer. When you were watching this movie, did you feel like every line of dialogue that the turtles say has a stage note that says hold for applause? Because
oh my god.
Yeah. I think that the biggest thing about this, and I think the biggest point home is what you're saying, is that like everything is a one-liner, right? But it's just like the quick turn, like and the stuff that you were talking about for production beforehand makes a lot of sense. It's this quick turnaround. It's like they need to muddle it down from whatever it was before, and then what Scott was saying is like they have to appeal to as many as possible. So it's like they really like totally flip from what seemed to be the intention of the first film. Again, I don't remember and I haven't seen it, but what you were telling me, and I believe that makes sense. And they just like, it's so fucking sloppy is not the right word, but it's every like there's no room for breathing at all. There's no breathing room at all. It's fucking just piled on.
the perfect analogy is this is a slasher sequel, right? Oh, like this is like this is, you know why you love this, Scott? This is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 of the Ninja Turtle franchise. It's like, this is like, all right, we did our serious gritty one. Now let's get like ridiculous. Like, let's have blood spurting out of things for no explainable reason.
If one of the turtles would have been smashing on a foot soldier, been like, incoming mail, that would have just, man, such a better film.
Bill Moseley is one of the foot.
I just don't know if there's anything more, like, to me, after we got through that toy store robbery fight scene, like, at the end of that, I was just like, is there anything more 90s? Like, is there anything more
quintessentially... Yeah, the ninja rap.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just feel like you're forgetting the...
You're right.
You're young.
You're right.
I was 9 years old when this came out, and... Vanilla Ice was everywhere. Everybody in my Boy Scout troop loved Ice Ice Baby. Yeah. So when Ninja Rap came out, everybody loved Ninja Rap. I myself was never a huge fan of Ninja Rap. I thought it kind of was a little over the top, a little unbelievable for a 9-year-old.
How did they know the dance? From the movie that's very subtle and
that was the part where the movie fell apart for Scott as a 9-year-old. He was like, "Now, why is Vanilla Ice playing in the city right now?"
No, it's not Vanilla Ice. It's them knowing the dance.
Let me ask you both a question real quick, because now this I said that it's quintessentially 90s, and now, but I wonder, when somebody says that about the 90s, what year do you think is, because like 91 is fucking early for me to say a decade. You said 93
is quintessential 90s.
Yeah, okay.
So here's the thing. So I'm going to mention two different things tied to One Hit Thunder, because they both weirdly pertain to this. So we did an episode on Vanilla Ice, and I do have to talk about the fact that I don't think that we have ever seen someone go from the highest highs to the lowest lows as quickly as Vanilla Ice did. Like in 1990, the best-selling rap single of all time, like the number three highest charting song in the entire year, behind like Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You, and Vogue by Madonna, and is literally dating Madonna at this point in his life. And then by March of 1991, he's doing the Ninja Rap, and even a 9-year-old Scott Rogers is like, I don't know about this. His career just nosedives in like a matter of months. And I think it's because like he had action figures. There was a Vanilla Ice action figure. Vanilla Ice was everywhere. Then the other thing I want to talk about, because this was something that Chris recently brought up, is that we recorded an episode on Aha, Take On Me, right? And that song came out in 1985. And we were talking about how Nirvana came out in 1991.
Right.
And it's like, that's 6 years. Like, music changed like that dramatically. But if you think about 2021 and what's on the radio, and think about 6 years ago when it was like 2015, like, it's still like Taylor Swift, it's still Drake, it's still Justin Bieber. Like,
that might also be, I think that you're taking one thing and making it into something else here, just because in the early 90s, all we had was MTV and radio. And true. So things moved faster. And now no one gives a fuck about the radio. And so, like, yeah.
And MTV just
be
plays ridiculousness
AC/DC
for 24 straight hours.
You know, exactly. Like, AC/DC has been on hard rock radio since I was born.
But I think that the 90s in general, though, for it to be legit, the 90s is such an anomaly of a decade, because so much stuff was happening in the 90s that I don't think we'll ever fully see happen again, which I've talked about before, which is that, like, with cinema and with music, the most critically beloved stuff was also the most commercially successful stuff. And that is so rare for, like, those two worlds to meet.
That crossover of technology. And I don't mean, like, technology, like the literal devices or cameras or CD, like, whatever. I mean the meaning of how accessible technology is to popular culture, crossing with what studios and artists and creators and storytellers are realizing is profitable. So it's like this weird, like, they finally have met in this pit.
Yeah, this well, that makes total sense because like CDs, tapes, VHS tapes were all ubiquitous, and so it's like, oh, but who's who has control of that? It's like large companies. So I love that thesis. I wonder if there's a slight bent to the early 90s where those executives and people in power were allowing artists to be artists and be artists more than they were just being a product. And I don't know, maybe that's also could be nostalgia.
Well, no,
it's all
that,
really weird though. Like you have to, because you also have to think about, like, I'm not the world's biggest Pearl Jam fan. Like, I, you know that I am a grunge loving man, but like Pearl Jam has never been my group. Eddie Vedder, like there's something to be said about the 90s grunge scene, especially when you look back at it from a 2021 lens, and it's like the shit that we care about right now, like Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder, and then we're already talking about that in 1991. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Kurt Cobain was talking about rape and homophobia and how, like, fucked up that shit is and how we need to, like, not be misogynistic and not be that way. Mm-hmm. And, like, Eddie Vedder did his entire, like, 1991 MTV Unplugged with, like, pro-choice written across his chest and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they were really taking this, like, hard feminist bent. But, yeah, I just think the 90s is such an interesting point. And I've talked about it before, too, where the only big difference between now and the 90s, the early 90s, as far as, like, the political stuff goes, and, man, I can feel those one-star reviews just flying in right now from some neckbeards. But, like, the difference is, like, 2021's attitude is, like, the world is fucked, all this stuff is bad, what can we do to fix it? Versus, like, 1991's attitude for a lot of the artists was, like, hey, the world's fucked, so let's just, like, fucking go down in flames with it type thing.
Yeah, but you bring up an amazing point, and I'm sorry, now we're on. But there's something about the 90s where I think the people of power knew that it didn't matter if Kurt Cobain wrote fucking pro-choice on him, it was going to be profitable. Like, they were going to make money off of it no matter what. So
Rebellion,
it did not
matter. Cool.
Like, of course it is impactful to us, you know, socially and culturally. But
financially, they didn't give a shit. Yeah.
They didn't give a fuck. So, you know, in 2021, I think the cynicism has caught up with the realization that, like, oh, you know, you can go out and you can stand for something, but, like, if you don't have the backing, then it's not going to go that far. And now that there's so many voices that are out there now, the cynicism is fucking real and heavy. And like it paralleling that with the 90s so close in time, it's like, fuck.
Well, like, and the last thing I'll say is my favorite time of the 90s is like the 94 to 96 era, as far as music goes. And obviously it's like a hotbed for one hit wonders, because it was that post Cobain world where now every record label is trying to find the next Nirvana. So they're signing the Toadies, and they're signing, like, all these weird bands that just sound kind of grungy. Like, it's an awesome time. So guys, strap in. This is what you can expect for Horror Movie Night 2022, I guess, is a little bit of movie talk, a lot of deep historical breakdowns. Yeah. Fuck you, person 2 years ago that said entertaining but not educational.
Back to Teenage Mutant. I did have
the Giant Turtle
rap on VHS, which was a 6-minute tape, which is fucking insane.
But think about that, the Turtles cartoons and the X-Men cartoons, cartoons, would they be two episodes, and that totaled something like 36 minutes, you know? Those were the light. Remember how light those tapes were compared to a full-length movie?
You thought something was wrong with it if there wasn't more like film in the fucking
box filled with air. Like, what is this?
Yeah, you're like, you get those for a present as a kid, and you're like, what is this shit? You know, you're like, is this a fake tape? I'm done talking about the movie. Whatever. It's.
I have one more thing too, so I'll let you go
I got,
first.
I got two.
Can I just show you my notes for all the people on the page? That's just my fucking notes.
Yeah, if we're not talking about the historical context, like, there's nothing to talk about here. So two things. One, I've talked about it before. Were they the Hostess cream pies, with the green cream in the middle?
Yes.
Man, I'll find that picture. It's saved on my phone. Like, I have saved that on my phone forever. The other thing I was going to say was that I had not one, but two of the Fly Guy.
Baxter Stockman.
I had two of those. And I also had two of the B He-Man character. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
I really had a thing for the flying creature action figures. But that brings me to a much more important point that I wanted to ask both of you guys. I know Matt can answer this question. I don't know if Kyle can answer this question. But if you guys, as children, had the turtle toys, what was your favorite? And I will tell you mine to kick it off. There was this garbage pan character who came with this slime that he had a garbage can on his back and then a hole in his chest, and you would push the slime through and it would like goop out of his chest. And I can still smell that slime. I mean, it lasted probably a week, you know, like it didn't last long. I mean, it's not that they were expecting kids to keep those things, you know, and not play with them. But I remember that being the most, oh, and it came out of his nose. And I remember being absolutely delighted and grossed out at the same time.
Did he sort of look like Toxie?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, yeah.
His one foot was literally a sewer.
Yes.
Like a sewer.
I was just looking it up because there was a few toys like that existed. Like
there were a couple. Yeah, they did this. They did a couple where they had that goo, and that was the only one that I got to have.
I did have some, and I must have gotten them from a yard sale. Like my grandma and I used to go to yard sales all the time because I didn't watch the cartoons. I don't know these characters, but I had Rat King, and I fucking loved Rat King. My grandparents showed me a lot of Universal, like, you know, monster movies. So he was sort of mummy-esque. He was, like, scary enough. That was my toy. And, like, if you search Rat King toy, like, it's, you know, there's the one, right? It's you'll just the it, one. Yeah, it's the one that I had, and I fucking loved it. I can't remember any other ones that I had besides the turtles themselves. Rat King I played with for a long time.
I'm going to hold this one up to the screen too for a visual component for the two of you as well as the Patreon people. I'm going to go with Mutant Man, one of the most horrific origin stories of any character in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's basically just like a delivery guy who is making a delivery where Shredder's secret lair is or whatever, slips and falls and gets sliced to pieces and dropped into acid and is produced as just like his innards as a living, breathing thing. And they like take his, like, let's take a look at this toy again. They take his chopped up body parts and Frankenstein them together to this machine and then put his innards just floating around in a glass jar where he can control them. Like, horrific. This is a kid's Saturday morning cartoon origin story.
Wait, oh, it's from the cartoon?
That's from the cartoon, dude. That wasn't just a toy. That was a cartoon episode.
Do I need to
episode.
Fuck with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles more than I do? Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, there's some fun episodes.
The neutrinos were always fun.
Yeah, Brian would bring up probably the favorite of our childhood, which was the Attack of the Killer Pizzas, where they made these radioactive sausage pieces that were actually little eggs. And when you heated up the pizza, they hatched into like basically xenomorphs.
Xenomorphs, yeah.
What the fuck?
Horror Movie Night, dude. There we go.
Does Shredder use his helmet as a weapon?
Not that I recall.
Then why the fuck is he sharpening it?
Yeah, also, how does the ooze affect inorganic material? Well, yeah, like non-living material. How is when he eats all the remaining vials, does his armor become strong, bigger and sharper? And, you know, like...
You just wanted a naked Kevin Nash? Because that's who played Super Shredder in this movie, was Kevin Nash of the NWO. But I have to say, I'm glad that you brought this up, Scott, because my last note is that the look of Super Shredder is kind of underwhelming.
Like, well, even as a child, Super Shredder was a disappointment because he is in the movie for all of 60 or 90 seconds. I mean, it's not. Yeah. It's such an aha.
It was a quickly resolved issue with Super
Shredder. Yeah, they didn't even fight him. He was just too heavy.
I feel like even Tokon and Rezar are like, pretty easily handled in this movie, ultimately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's because they're babies.
They're babies.
All right, so double features. Scott, you picked this bad boy. What do you got for us?
I feel bad because I think that maybe this conversation might have changed your mind on your double feature, so I'm going to go last, okay?
I need to make sure that this is what it's called because I watched it a lot at my cousin's house at Warriors of Virtue.
Oh yeah,
that's on my long
this.
List for Patreon as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I would Ryan brought that up a year ago. I would love to watch it and talk with y'all about it, because I know that my cousin Tim and I attempted to watch it 10 years ago, maybe. You know?
Yeah. I don't think I even got through it as a kid. I think I got bored with it as a child.
It's so there must have been something about martial arts, because A, none of us took martial arts. So watching some sort of popular culture. See, so I think that's the thing. I think I guess you guys still liked the martial arts things, but
oh, I wanted to be a turtle.
No, I was a Power Ranger, man. There was something about it that, like, we were like, oh, we're not going to take it, but it's on TV and all these things. It's like, whatever. So Warriors of Virtue, I'm going in blind saying that double feature, because I have no detail about it to give you besides
I know
that my childhood put those things together to watch.
All right, so I'm going to go with a movie that also involves martial arts. It involves rubber suit monsters. It also was something that won a Black Friday voting contest to be one of the first films that we picked this year. But it gets a slight edge because it features both Jeffrey Combs and Mark Hamill. I'm going with 1990s The Guyver.
Fucking I know Guyver. You so well. I as soon as you're like, oh, I got it. It was a lightning flash in my brain. I was like, he's gonna go with the Guyver. I'm going to bring up The Caboose by. I changed my decision. I made a different decision as we were discussing Muckman, which is the name of that toy that I was talking about, because he reminds me of Toxic Avenger, and so I'm gonna go with the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Which put also the had the Toxic
put the
Crusaders.
Kids to bed after feature A, and then stay up.
No, make them stay up and watch Toxic Avenger. It's not like we're watching Toxie 2, which is like ultra violent.
Toxie 2 is the secret of the ooze.
Toxie 2 is the secret of the ooze of the Toxic Avenger franchise.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
All right, so what is something that you watched that you want to give a quick, hey, thumbs up, this was great, too?
I'll start, since it was my pick, and I will take back my power. I watched the newest Spider-Man movie. I went to a theater to see it, which was very weird to do, because as of the recording of this, the variant Omicron is just ravaging Ohio.
That wasn't one of the characters in Secret of the Ooze.
No, that's Transformers. I know it's easy to get them confused. No Way Home was good. Was it worth going to a theater to see just to avoid spoilers? No, but I did enjoy the watch, even though it was definitely anxiety forming. I was definitely riding high on the CBD wave while I was watching that film.
I do want to talk about something else in the Marvel world, but I'm also going to keep this kind of brief and spoilery because the finale just aired the day that we're recording this. Hawkeye, pretty good ride. I enjoyed it as just like this nice little 6-episode kind of ode to Shane Black action movie series. So two thumbs up. Loved it.
I like the idea of 6 and 8 and 10 episode series, because then it's not like there's no filler.
Well, and I like this was exactly what I was complaining about What If not being, which is like, yeah, it's like tied into the universe, but like you don't need to watch Hawkeye for like this grand understanding of the MCU. As a whole,
to understand what if you really have to have watched everything else. Yeah,
it's a nice little isolated story that you can kind of just like pop in and enjoy at any point.
Well, I can even see
it's so Christmassy that I could actually see myself being like, you know what, I'll rewatch those 6 episodes like next
Feige
December.
Did that. He did that on purpose because MCU was he wanted Iron Man 3 to be a Christmas movie and it didn't happen. And like they kind of half-ass made Spider-Man No Way Home a Christmas movie, but I didn't feel it. I think that Hawkeye is really what Kevin Feige wanted, because he wanted a Christmas MCU event that people come back to every season, and I think that they
succeeded. It's just fun. Yeah. It's just a fun,
very, very light,
fun watch. All right, Kyle, it's all you, buddy.
The same way that I did Little Girl Who Lived Down the Lane, I read and then watched William Goldman's Magic, which then became Richard Attenborough's Magic with Anthony Hopkins and Anne Margaret.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And ventriloquist movie. I would not say it's necessarily a ventriloquist dummy movie, though that becomes part of it later on. But William Goldman, not to be confused with Golding, who did Lord of the Flies, different authors, wrote the screenplay for it too. And Anthony Hopkins is one of the greatest of all time. Seriously. Yeah. Like, he is fucking incredible. And just for those who haven't seen it, Magic is about a magician / ventriloquist who gets sort of greenlit to be in the big time. Like, they're like, he's going to be like the first like really good magician ventriloquist to be on television. But he's like, no. And then we find out why as things go on. He's not totally with it. The book is really incredible. I highly recommend the book if you've seen the movie and liked, you know, Hopkins' performance, or, you know, thought it was really interesting that there's this, you know, divide between him and his art form. Go into the book, because like the book is so, so interesting in how it's written, and like the prose involved actually reflects the character. It's not just like an author telling you what the character is like. It's like truly the writing style changes as things progress. And I just love shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, I just love that. It's not even attention to detail. It's just like, that's the storytelling, you know?
The TV spot, like the 30 second TV spot, is horrifying.
Horrifying.
All right. Well, that was Horror Movie Night's last episode of 2021. Get the fuck out of here, you overrated year. Bring on 2022. Longer episodes, deeper conversations, lower listenership.
But more Spotify reviews.
More Spotify reviews than ever before in 2022. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't, hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/HMN podcast. There's tons of great content out there. Weekly bonus episodes. You can see our pretty faces on video in unedited form, which is filled with some really nasty
stuff. You can
see
all the
sometimes.
Beers that I'm drinking.
Yeah, you can actually physically see Kyle's beers. And also, just if you haven't already, go and give us a rate and review on Apple Podcast and or Spotify. From what I understand, it really does help out the show. And if you think that you know someone who would love this stuff, send them our way. We'll take care of them. You know that we are the place where the unaccepted are accepted.
That's
over
right,
here
baby.
At Horror Movie Night. All right, thanks. And we'll be back next week with the first movie of the new year. Woo!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.